New independent India, one of the very few totally planned cities in the world. How does Le Corbusier's city, Chandigarh, live today? For Radio 3's Sunday feature, Sukhdev Sandhu returns to the city he visited as a boy to see how this vision of the future has coped 60 years on.
I begin to feel a bit like a rat in a laboratory maze. The grid is an open prison.
Le Corbusier in Chandigarh, Radio 3's Sunday feature, starting at 9:30.
Well, it's now just after 1 o'clock. Time for a summary of the news this lunchtime here on Radio 3. It's read by David Cornett.
Western military officials are assessing the impact of their overnight strikes against Colonel Gaddafi's air defences in Libya. British, French and American forces were involved in the first wave of attacks. The United States' most senior military officer, Admiral Mike Mullen, said the operation had made significant progress and Colonel Gaddafi's advance on the rebel-held city of Benghazi had been halted. Here, a spokesman for the Chief of Defence Staff, Major General John Lorimer, said targets were being selected carefully to avoid civilian casualties. Colonel Gaddafi has denounced the strikes on his air defences as terrorism which would be defeated. There are unconfirmed reports of new attacks by pro-Gaddafi forces on rebels in the western city of Misrata. Witnesses have spoken of heavy gunfire and shelling and that a number of people have been killed. Officials at the Fukushima nuclear power station in Japan say pressure levels are now stabilising inside the reactor, which was worst hit by the earthquake and tsunami 9 days ago. There have been fears that additional releases of radioactive steam would be needed to prevent an explosion at Reactor 3. Efforts are now focused on reconnecting power supplies to the plant so that cooling systems can be restarted. Reports say an 80-year-old woman and her teenage grandson have been rescued from the rubble of their home in northeast Japan. Rescuers said both were conscious but weak and had survived by eating food from their fridge. The Chancellor, George Osborne, has said he won't be announcing any more tax increases in his budget later this week. He again hinted that a planned rise in fuel duty wouldn't go ahead and said his measures would focus on growth. The Shadow Chancellor, Ed Balls, said the coalition had done precious little so far to promote growth. And the weather, it'll be a mainly dry and cloudy afternoon with some sunny spells and patchy light rain in exposed western areas. During the night, it'll be cloudy in the northwest with further light rain or drizzle. There'll be a few clear spells towards the south and east. BBC News and Weather at 1:03.
David, thank you very much. Well, we explore the musical ideas that form the fabric of arguably the world's first operatic masterpiece, Monteverdi's L'Orfeo, this afternoon. A specially gathered group of musicians helps with the illustrations in discovering music at 5. And we head back in time now for music of a similar vintage. Time for the Early Music Show with Catherine Bott today, and the second of two programmes this weekend that focus on the music from the Austrian Habsburg dynasty.
Thank you. Armonico Tributo Austria, directed by Lawrence Duftschmidt, praising the Lord with a specially celebratory Te Deum, possibly written to commemorate the victory for Austria and her allies at the Battle of Blenheim in 1704. The battle was an episode in the War of the Spanish Succession, which was really about the threat of a coalition between France and Spain, a consummation devoutly not to be wished by England, the Low Countries, Portugal, parts of Spain itself, and above all, by the Holy Roman Empire. The empire was ruled from Austria by the Habsburg dynasty. Holy Roman Emperor, King of Hungary and Bohemia at the time of Blenheim, was Leopold I, succeeded the next year by Josef I, an enthusiast for all the arts and a keen amateur musician, which made the job of Viennese court composer one of the most sought after in all Europe. Perhaps the most successful man to assume this role is the subject of our early music show today.
Thank you.
Dorothea Röschmann as the Virgin with the Wiener Academy, directed by Martin Haselberg, in an aria from an Easter drama from Baroque Austria. So who is this fortunate composer to the Habsburgs? His name is Johann Joseph Fuchs. Today he's rather forgotten, and yet his significance to the history of music is enormous, and in his day he was highly regarded as a composer. Let's do his life story. Working backwards from the fact that he was definitely 81 when he died, his birth year must be 1660. Johann Joseph was born into a humble family in the Austrian village of Hirtenfeld. He was obviously a bright lad. He went to university, first in Graz, then in Ingolstadt, where he studied languages, logic, music and law, which gave him a number of career choices. He went for music and worked as a church organist in Ingolstadt for a while before moving to Vienna. Fuchs was a gifted performer of the vanishing trick. His progression from provincial church organist to Viennese musical supremo is shrouded in mystery. It does seem likely that the Emperor Leopold heard one of his sacred compositions and liked it enough to appoint him to his service. Once established in Vienna, Fuchs got married in June 1696 to a well-to-do young lady, Clara Juliana Schnitzenbaum. Later in life, he encouraged a sort of patriotic myth to grow around his amazing rise to success, involving possible travels to Italy in the service of a Hungarian archbishop, which would account for his knowledge of Italian musical style. Our mystery man managed to maintain his court position in Vienna over the reigns of three Holy Roman emperors, Leopold I, his successor, Joseph I, and finally Charles VI, surviving at least one round of major cutbacks in the imperial musical establishment, a clear indication of the high regard in which Johann Joseph was held. In 1715, Emperor Charles appointed Fuchs as his Hofkapellmeister, a post which he held for the rest of his long working life. And this is the sort of thing he wrote for a Holy Roman Emperor to enjoy.
Thank you.
René Klemencic, directing the Klemencic Consort in the first movement of the Ouverture à Quatre by Johann Joseph Fuchs, court composer to three successive Holy Roman Emperors. Fuchs left a tremendous amount of music, around 20 operas, 14 oratorios, 80 masses, three requiems and lots of smaller sacred pieces. Among his instrumental compositions were 50 or so church sonatas, 79 partitas and suites, and a great deal of keyboard music. The one work for which he really deserves to be remembered, though, is not a musical composition, but a manual of counterpoint writing technique. Gradus ad Parnassum, Step by Step to Parnassus, was published at the Emperor's expense in 1725 and is still consulted today. And it's very readable. It's set out as a dialogue between one Josephus, representing Fuchs, and Aloysius, a.k.a. Palestrina, who knew a thing or two about counterpoint. Here's a sample.
I come to you, venerable master, in order to be introduced to the rules and principles of music.
You want, then, to learn the art of composition?
Yes.
But are you not aware that this study is like an immense ocean, not to be exhausted even in the lifetime of a Nestor? For musicians and poets are born such. You must try to remember whether, even in childhood, you felt a strong and natural inclination to this art, and whether you were deeply moved by the beauty of concords.
Yes, most deeply. Even before I could reason, I was overcome by the force of this strange enthusiasm, and I turned all my thoughts and feelings to music. And now the burning desire to understand it possesses me, drives me almost against my will, and day and night lovely melodies seem to sound around me.
Let us settle down to work, then, and make a beginning in the name of Almighty God, the fountain of all wisdom.
Before we start on the exercises, revered master, may I still ask what one is supposed to understand by the term counterpoint? I have heard this term used not only by musicians, but also by laymen.
Your question is a good one, for this is to be the subject of our first study and work. It is necessary for you to know that in earlier times, instead of our modern notes, dots or points were used. Thus, one used to call a composition in which point was set against, or counter to the point, counterpoint. This usage is still followed today, even though the form of the notes has changed. By the term counterpoint, therefore, is understood a composition which is written strictly according to technical rules.
I couldn't have put it better myself.
¶¶
extracts from Gradus ad Parnassum, the counterpoint method written by Johann Joseph Fuchs, translated from the original Latin by Alfred Mann, and in between, two short pieces by Fuchs, a movement called For the Nightingale from his Ouverture in D minor, played by the Freiburg Baroque Orchestra, and then a canzone in three parts, Libertino, played by the Klemencic Consort. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, today investigating the shadowy life and rather neglected output of an Austrian composer most famous for his book about how to compose. Gradus ad Parnassum was written in Latin, but within 20 years of its first publication, there were translations into German, Italian, French and English. It's not merely a counterpoint primer, more a composition manual. Bach studied it, so did Mozart, Haydn and Beethoven. An adaptation of the work, Titel's Der Neue Gradus, was issued as recently as 1959, so the name of Fuchs continues to influence Western musical thought. He also wrote a singing method, Der Singfundament. So, time for some more vocal music. One of Fuchs's devotional pieces for the Virgin Mary. Countertenor Carlos Mena sings his Ave Maria. Carlos Mena singing an Ave Maria by Fuchs with Armonico Tributo Austria, directed by Lorenz Duftschmidt. Looking at a portrait of Fuchs, painted in 1717 when he must have been in his late 50s, I see the trappings of his success, velvet, brocade and lace, and an elaborate full-bottomed wig rising high above his forehead in two curly horns. The face of the man wearing all this is intelligent, wary, looking straight out at me with what my gran would have called an old-fashioned look. He works hard in his important job as court Hofkapellmeister, and no one's going to displace him any time soon. Well, that's how I read his portrait anyway. What it doesn't reveal is that Fuchs suffered chronically from gout. I've already mentioned that Fuchs was a prolific composer of works for all occasions. Much of it was thought lost until after the Second World War, when a revival of interest in him led to the discovery of several important pieces. We're going to hear one of these recent discoveries now. In Le dolcezze e l'amarezze della notte, The Sweetness and Bitterness of the Night, Fuchs uses his unparalleled skill with counterpoint to create something characterful and satisfying. The piece is all about three-part textures, a woodwind trio contrasted with a string trio, rather than the conventional four-part writing you might expect. And with movements called The Night Watchman and Nocturnal Fantasy, the scene is set for a little night music. Gottfried von der Goltz directing the Freiburg Baroque Orchestra from the violin in that concerto by Fuchs. In June 1731, Fuchs's wife died, and he began to wind down a bit. Remember that he was a martyr to gout, and he was by now in his early 70s. He made a will and handed over many of his musical responsibilities at court to his deputy, the Italian Antonio Caldara, who died in 1736, Fuchs, meanwhile, outlasting him by another 5 years in declining health until a raging fever saw him off in February 1741 at the age of 81, much mourned at court. Johann Sebastian Bach told his son Carl Philipp Emanuel that Fuchs was the contemporary composer whom he had most admired. Befitting his status as a key figure in the development of Austrian Baroque music, Fuchs was buried in the Cathedral of St. Stephen in Vienna. So let's end today's programme with his setting of the Marian antiphon Alma Redemptoris Mater, Dear Mother of the Redeemer, Come Help Your People, first heard in Vienna on the 1st of February 1728. It demonstrates a particularly Austrian Baroque colouring in the orchestra, a demanding part for solo trombone, probably played by the gifted Leopold Christian, whom Fuchs described as the most eminent virtuoso in the world on this instrument. Lorenz Duftschmidt directs Armonico Tributo Austria with soprano Mieke van der Sloos and trombonist Daniel LaSalle.
The Arma Redemptoris Mater by Johann Josef Fuchs, who was the subject of today's early music show. The performers on that recording were the soprano Mika von der Slaus and harmonica Tributo Austria, directed by Lawrence Duftschmidt. The early music show was presented by Catherine Bott, and today's producer was Chris Wines.
I'm Katie Derham. Join me this week for Afternoon on 3 and Beethoven. All 9 symphonies across a week, starting on Monday with number 1. Finishing on Friday with number 9. Nestling among them on Thursday afternoon, our weekly opera matinee brings you Donizetti from Vienna State Opera with the legendary soprano Edita Gruberova. Afternoon on 3 with Beethoven and the Borgias. Weekday afternoons on BBC Radio 3 from 1 o'clock.
Well, in a couple of hours this afternoon on Radio 3, we're in Truro for this week's choral evensong. It was recorded on Wednesday in Truro Cathedral. Music by Talis and Mendelssohn, amongst others. But now it's time for the Radio 3 Request Programme with Fiona Talkington.
And to begin with, Dvorak, as you've probably never heard him before.
Many the songs I sung.